another crazy day at the World Cup. Celebrations in Zagreb as Croatia knock out the tournament favourites, Brazil, on penalties. Luka Modric's side once again then through to the semi-finals. Brazil once again losing to European competition. Hello, welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. What a day this was in the World Cup. Craig Burley alongside me, as is Ali Moreno. We kick things off with the tournament favourites then out. Brazil looked so good up to this point. They never really got going against Croatia. Goalless after 90 minutes. We go into extra time. A brilliant individual goal from Neymar would see Chiche's side take the lead, but Croatia, with their only shot on target, would find the back of the net to make it 1-1. It would go to penalties. Rodrigo and Marquinhos seeing their penalties miss. So it's Croatia who then advance to the semi-finals. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we? Oh, Mario Malkiot, we'll talk about you, Mario, a little bit later on. Of course, disappointment for the Dutch. Oh, Gustavo Hoffman is with us, our Brazilian expert. And Shaka's here as well. Before we hear from you guys, this wasn't supposed to happen. Brazil would look brilliant.
Yeah, it wasn't. They had, but this was a step up. Mm. You know, Lovren and Guardiola in particular have been... particularly Guardiola, been brilliant. The keeper continued his magnificent form. Fullback from Celtic on the right side, excellent. And of course that midfield three for with Modric in there. So yeah, it wasn't supposed to happen, but they gained some control in the game. And Brazil, yeah, they huffed and puffed, and Livakovic made some great saves at the key point. But it wasn't a South Korea performance. It wasn't a like Harlem Globetrotters, this is amazing. It was bits and pieces against a very, very good side. And yeah, I mean, on the balance of chances created, they looked more dangerous. But they didn't get the job done again.
No, and they didn't dominate completely. As Craig says, we saw some good saves. But Croatia had a lot of the ball as well. Mm. There wasn't that kind of that swashbuckling football that we've associated with them.
I think Brazil were surprised that Croatia were willing to press Brazil higher up the field as they did early on in the game. To the point to where, you just mentioned Juranovic, he became a critical part of the success of Croatia in that he was willing to run with the ball 40 yards, nobody making contact with him, because Vini Jr. is not going to track back, and there's no help coming out of the midfield, and Neymar is not going to track back, and so this guy just continues to drive with the ball. And so now Croatia gets a little bit of confidence. Now they have possession of the ball in the attacking half, and while they're not as dangerous in the attacking half because they don't quite have the talent level that Brazil does in the final third, Croatia was there and felt comfortable in the manner in which they were playing. Brazil does Croatia a favor by slowing down the game.
Yeah.
And they did this time and time again. Well, if I were talking to Neymar right now, and if we had a personal relationship, I would sit him down and say, Neymar, why are you standing on the ball? Repeatedly. Time and time again, why are you standing on the ball? In doing that, you're helping Croatia. You're allowing them to sit behind the ball now, and now you're moving the ball side to side, and they're moving with you, so it becomes easier to defend. The strength of Brazil, when they get into the final third, is the quick movement of the ball and the quick movement of players. When you stand on it, you become predictable.
Gustavo, how are you?
Hello there. I'm fine.
Don't lie.
Brazil is not fine, but I'm fine. Thank you. Well, it's a huge disappointment for Brazil. A really huge disappointment. A big frustration for the Brazilian people, because everybody in Brazil really thought that Brazil could win this World Cup, could win the World Cup for the first time after 20 years, after 2002. So it's a huge disappointment, because Brazil was playing well. Brazil has a group of talents. Brazil also was playing well with so many tactics. And what we saw in the World Cup was a team very predictable. I absolutely agree with Alejandro when he says that Brazil was surprised by the way Croatia started the match, pressing high, fighting for the possession of the ball. Brazil didn't feel comfortable in the field in any moment. I think that this was the key for the key for Croatia in this match, because Brazil didn't feel comfortable, because Croatia was pressing high, because Croatia was with the ball. We have to talk about Luka Modric. What a player, what a genius he is. He knows how to manage a game like this. And we also have to talk about, in my opinion, the mistakes that Tite made today. I do not agree when you sack a player like Vinicius Jr. in the 19th minute of a decisive match. Yes, Brazil had a problem to defend Juranovic, but you have many ways to correct that. You don't sack one of your protagonists, one of the best Brazilian players, in the 19th minute in a match that you know that is hard. We can also talk about Neymar. Should have kicked the one penalty at least. You could have changed the order for Neymar. Well, in this whole World Cup, Brazil made some good matches, played very well against South Korea. Today, we didn't see the best Brazil. We have the stats. We have so many good stats. But I say that I watched, when I see these stats, the same movie that I watched in 2018. When Brazil lost to Belgium with brilliant stats, but didn't know how to finish the match.
Yeah, Gustavo's doing really well after that game, Dan, as you can quite clearly tell.
Yeah. He seems fine with it. Well, does he know that you back Brazil, Shaka? Really?
Oh, there it is. There it is.
You change your mind. That was it.
Well, one of the differences if you look at France, who play tomorrow, and we'll find out, and you look at the teams they've lost to, Croatia, who haven't won a World Cup, Belgium, who haven't won a World Cup, Brazil, on home territory, got crushed by Germany. It's not a good look. I mean, you can give me all the flair you want.
Yeah.
But you look at the difference was, we were talking about it just before we came on air, how Matty Cash was quoted as saying, I felt I had a really good game against Mbappe, but Mbappe was the difference. Juranovic, brilliant today. But Vinicius Jr., okay, we can argue about him coming off or staying on, but he certainly wasn't the difference. And that is ultimately what's got the French where they are, kind of, and what might take them further come tomorrow's game. Look, maybe this sort of Harlem Globetrotter performance they had against South Korea was not such a good thing.
It made them complacent?
Maybe they come out and thought, you know what, we're going to just do this again. Think Spain, think Costa Rica. Carried away. Oh, this is it. I mean, look at that. Spain, my God. They're going to just do that to everybody. No. Think again. Some opposition are tougher. And I think South Korea, they were a better side than we saw, but they capitulated to this sort of free-flowing, you know, sort of beach football, you know, just off-the-cuff movement. And the plaudits that came with it were incredible. Come to Croatia, super organised, lots of experience, one of the best midfielders on the planet over the last 10 years in the middle of the park, great workmanlike, and a mentality that is just fight, fight, fight. You know, independence in 91, a population of less than 4 million compared to Brazil and others, and they could be in their second World Cup final in the space of 4 years. That's an amazing, amazing achievement.
With a 37-year-old and the heart of everything that's
good. And they keep churning this out.
Yeah. Now, you are absolutely correct. 100% correct, Craig. And yet Brazil were up 1-0.
Right.
See, for all the things that didn't happen for Brazil in this game, they were up 1-0 into the second half of extra time. So my question is, what in the world are they doing having people committed to the attack when you had a defensive posture to begin with in that second half of the extra time? How are six players out of the play in transition, and how does it become a 4v4 situation going in the opposite direction? My other question would be, why is Neymar on the field at that point? How is he helping you at that point? And you have Fabinho, whose job is to break up transition opportunities. You have Fabinho on the bench. And now, we're going to keep Neymar out there for what? He's giving you a slow jog. He's not going to help you defensively. If you're trying to see this game out, which is what's the posture of Brazil in the second half of the extra time, then you don't need him out there. He doesn't help you in any way, shape, or form. The other question I have many questions. Other question I have, you decide to bring out Militao.
Yes.
and you put Alexandro, who wasn't fully healthy, you put him on the left-hand side, and you bring Danilo over to the right-hand side. Danilo had been grabbing his leg because he was cramping. So if you tell me that Militao was hurting, so was Danilo. And if it comes down to a situation in which I want somebody to defend, I prefer Militao than Danilo. So there's so many decisions here that were made or not made, as the case would be with, by Tite, that were more emotional than anything else, rather than evaluating what's in front of you. I don't care if you have controversy with Neymar because he gets mad if you bring him off the field. You deal with that after you've qualified to the next round, after you've won the game. Until then, Neymar, come off the field. I'm going to secure this win. We'll talk about this afterwards.
Well, I presume he never took him off because he was going to take a penalty.
Well,
lo and behold. Yeah, but the other side is Antony gave the ball away, yeah. I believe.
Yeah.
Right, and they were pushing forward. And amongst other things, there was an arrogant naivety. And I think both those words are apt. There was a naivety and there was an arrogance at the end about how to keep the ball and how to see a game out. And one of the things I didn't like prior to Croatia scoring, and I didn't think they were going to score, but they did, was when Antony chased back Perisic to the right-back position, did a great job, blocked the ball, it went out for a goal kick, and then he stood over the lying Perisic like he was a 16-year-old kid, like that. Perisic, to be fair to him, got up, didn't take the bait and ran off, and I just thought, do you know what? This game is not over yet, and here we have this guy who's already been showboating, who should have been booked for diving and wasn't, standing over one of the most experienced players in Europe as if he was the big cheese. I just left a bad taste.
Shaka, you were at the game, and obviously there, it was all down to what happened in extra time. Once Neymar scored, did you get a feeling from everyone with regards to the players, the coaching staff, the fans, that the job was done?
Listen, before Neymar scored, I thought there was a nervousness in the stadium. It was a huge majority, Brazilian majority, as I'm sure you could tell. But once that goal went in, that kind of nervous atmosphere lifted, and it felt like Brazil would just go on to win this because let's be honest, Croatia did not threaten before that. But to the point that Craig just made about Antony and Perisic, now. Antony's it was a strange player for me. So in the first half, I was sat right behind where Rafinha was, and where Rafinha was playing on the right hand side. I thought he was having a very good game, and then Antony came on, and Antony's a really odd player to see. I thought he had the beating of Sosa all day, every day. But every time he got goal side of Sosa, he does not put himself between defender and ball. He runs, and as soon as anybody catches up with him, and he's not as quick as I thought, he has to do this kind of loop and take the defender on head on. And more times than not, he was beaten in Sosa yet again. But what started happening was Perisic would come over, and Perisic started playing bodyguard to Sosa and was very physical with him. And a couple of times, two of them had little head-to-heads off the ball that I thought was really telling. And maybe that's why when Antony got the ball off of Perisic, he kind of stood over him because two of them were having that. But that's not a battle that Antony could ever win. That's what Perisic was playing perfectly into what was needed of him in defending his right back. There are so many other questions about underperformers for Brazil as well. Rodrigo made absolutely no sense to me. I honestly don't know what his purpose was on the park, coming in for Vinicius Jr. He offered nothing. And then Neymar was a very frustrating character, goal apart. I thought at times he drifted out of the game, and I put that down to Brozovic, who I thought kind of sat in that half space between the centre halves and the midfielders wonderfully well. Never really man-marked Neymar, but just somehow filled that space, and in the end, Neymar could only get on the ball in dropping deep. So I thought while Brazil dominated, despite what the stats say, it felt like Brazil dominated the ball, I thought Croatia had a plan for everything that Brazil had to offer. And in the end, that got them at least the penalty kicks and through to the next round.
Well, he skirted the yellow card, the second yellow, a few times, didn't he?
Yes,
But then again, I think you look at the other side of it, and Danilo had a second yellow challenge, a rash challenge. We had the dive that wasn't punished by Antony. And then actually we had a bit of a petulant kick out from Neymar.
on a couple of occasions, and I think maybe that was part of the frustration as well.
Gustavo, looking at it, obviously we thought we saw the moment from Neymar, didn't we? We thought this was it. Yeah, this was his World Cup moment to see Brazil through to the semi-finals. Croatia then obviously equalised. He's clearly going to take the fifth penalty. But once Rodrigo misses his penalty, surely there has to be a discussion. There has to be someone who says, right, we need our best penalty takers now, because we could be in a situation which we did end up with, that Neymar didn't take a pen.
Yeah, I was talking to Shaka right before the show, exactly this. When Rodrigo loses the penalty, you have to change the order. You must have Neymar in the shootout. You can't leave him for the fifth penalty. You should have changed it. This is one of the main mistakes that Tite made today, and we are talking about that in Brazil. In Brazil now, people are talking about these mistakes. The decision to sack Vinicius, the decision to let Neymar for the 50 penalty. There are many things today. I think that Tite today didn't have the answers for the Croatian moves. When we talk about the match, we are talking about Zlatko Dalic, who made some tactical moves, some tactical changes, and Brazil didn't have the right answers. Brazil couldn't answer what Croatia made for today. We saw Luka Modric moving around, moving behind the defenders, looking for the ball, also marking a lot Casemiro when Brazil had the ball in the defense and was leaving to the attack. You know, Brazil, I think that it was too predictable for Croatia. And Zlatko Dalic knew exactly how Brazil would play and taught the match with that.
I thought Croatia had a plan for everything that Brazil had to offer. But to that point about the penalty kicks that Gustavo was speaking about there, even if once Rodrigo misses and you decide to change, you can change the order at any time you like. But you get down to your fourth kick, you still need your fourth kicker, your fifth kicker, whoever that may be, to score. And you need Alisson to make a save. So what are you saving Neymar for? You need to at least give Alisson that opportunity to make the save. And in the end, you put Marquinhos, and you still needed Alisson to make that save, and you deny him even that opportunity. I mean, it's a big ask, but at least you let it. You force Croatia to take that fifth kick. You force whoever it is about to step up with all that pressure on their shoulders against one of the best goalkeepers in the world. And that doesn't happen. And for a reason that I can't explain. Now, I never get into discussions around penalty orders. I think it really is an inexact science. You saw, and I know we'll talk about the Argentina game, Lionel Messi going first. For Croatia, you saw Luka Modric going third. So often we see national teams save their best kicker for last. But this is a different situation.
Yes.
This is one that you have to force Croatia to take that telling fifth kick. And you don't. You leave it to a centre-back to take that fourth kick. It's hard to explain.
Well, it's as simple as a bit of paper, isn't it? Because in a bit of paper, before the law changed, it was written down. And so you're guessing about your penalty takers. Right, I'll send a really good one first and I'll have somebody bringing up the rear end just in case, you know, where the pressure is. You haven't got that excuse now.
No.
You can just evolve it as it's going along. Which we didn't see Luis Enrique do, and we certainly haven't seen and didn't see the Brazilian coach do it.
And it's strange because, you know, Neymar, one of the leaders, grab that ball. Grab the ball and take it down there. You don't need somebody to give you permission, do you?
If indeed you are the leader, then we think you are within this national team. And if indeed, in that moment, you are needed, you can make those decisions. See, while the manager can be and should be criticized, he's not absolved from this criticism. The players are out there as well. And you know full well that if we don't score here, we go. So am I going to leave it on the center back, on Marquinhos to do it, or am I going to take that responsibility? It should be me if I'm Neymar. It's nobody else who's going to take this penalty. It's going to be me, and then we'll see what happens after that. So yes, it's on Tite. Of course it is. But it's also on the players. And that's a part that I think beyond the penalty kick shootout, because it's easy to focus on the penalty kick shootout. the penalty kick shootout doesn't happen if Brazil defend properly and don't have seven players out of position in a counterattack with 3 minutes to go in the second half of extra time. That's irresponsible. For players of this caliber, of this experience, you just sit behind the ball. Fred, why are you on the wrong side of the ball? You were brought in to sit in front of the back four and make sure that you defend properly. Why are you on the other side of the ball? There is no excuse for that. There's no excuse for Casemiro to be trailing the play. No excuse for it to be 4v3 going in the wrong direction. That is something that, while Tite will take criticism, the players themselves, what kind of decision-making is this and mismanagement on the field by those players with that sort of experience, with that sort of quality, unable to see a game out?
I think in some sense Brazil were a little bit lucky. Not lucky. Lucky in a way that Croatia... You could argue they're a really good Mandzukic away from being a real threat. Mm. You know, they lack somebody in that department. A lot of the other departments of the team are really, really good. And Brazil really didn't have to cope with, you know, anything of any real threat right through the middle until the end. It's just when you look at them losing Copa America as they did, albeit during the pandemic or during that time, and now... going out again, and I repeat it, you know, Croatia are a good side, but they haven't won a World Cup. It's not like Brazil going out to France and you go, right, OK, give it a best shot. Last two World Cups in a row.
Mario, I'm sorry, the Dutch get knocked out and you've got to listen to us waffle on for 20 minutes.
Look, some of the things you guys explained to me, I agree with, but listen, I let the guy jump on it. You know, say, take their time. But some of the things, I am happy that Saka called, Brozovic, because he was the man in the game. I know everybody looked at Modric, how great he played. But Brozovic, he closed all the lines to the ball to Neymar, and he started dropping off so far back that it killed the Brazilian game. And I was so happy he said that, you know, like, oh, man, he was the key man in the middle of the park. That's all I have to say, because he really changed the game for them.
Right.
Right. And relax. And relax a moment.
Ooh, I mean.
Oh, man. What next then, Gustavo? Chiche's obviously leaving. We knew he was going to leave at the end of this tournament. What next is Brazil's side? Neymar says that he may not play in another World Cup.
Yeah, before this World Cup, Neymar had already said that maybe he wouldn't. Actually, he said that this would be his last World Cup. I don't think so. I really don't think so. After the match day, he also said that he doesn't know if he's going to play for Brazil again. Probably because he lost the match. He was with the head, like, thinking so many things. But I'm for sure he's going to play again for Brazil. About the next World Cup, I don't know, but I think that he's also going to be in the next Brazil squad in the World Cup. About Tite, Tite leaves. He departs now. Everybody knew already that. Tite had already said for more than a year that he would leave after this World Cup, winning or losing. So this is a fact, and everybody knew that it would happen. Who's going to be the next manager for Brazil? We have no idea. We have no names. And we don't have a Brazilian manager capable now to be the next manager. So this is a problem, because Brazil never had a foreign manager. And if we look to the Brazilian football, we had in these last years, we have so many Portuguese managers that have achieved so many things in Brazil. We have Abel Ferreira with Palmeiras, 2 times Libertadores champions. We have Jorge Jesus, who's now in Fenerbahce in Turkey, who won the Libertadores also with Flamengo. So I think that we're going to have so many things happening in Brazil in the next weeks or months, I don't know. And actually now we have no name for the Brazilian spot now to be the next Brazilian manager. But I think that we're going to have so many people talking about a foreign manager.
I have the perfect solution for you, Gustavo.
Shaka Hislop.
Stevie Nicol. He's available. And he's fluent in Portuguese, I understand.
What? Yes.
Just the man.
Fluent in something. Yeah, exactly. Gustavo, thank you very much for joining us, mate. Much appreciated. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's focus, shall we, on the other quarterfinal that took place today. And boy, that delivered as well. Just a reminder, ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Argentina against Netherlands. Easy for Argentina. 2-0 up. You thought, that's it. Take the dog for a walk. Everything will be fine. The Dutch, though, would get themselves back into it pretty much with the last kick of the 90 minutes. They would equalise to make it 2-2. Goes to extra time. But in the end, it's Argentina who advance on penalties. Let's take a look at the celebrations. This... with the Argentinian fans. Once Ladro Martinez scores that penalty that sees them through, I'm sure scenes are replicated right across the country. I imagine somewhat contrasting scenes, though, in Amsterdam and certainly in the Mario Melchior household. Mario, how are you?
Oh, man. Oh, look, when the game started, we were all like, you know, one side of you believe that you can turn the point because Argentina, we met them so many times, but this was our sixth moment, I think. But of course, they're always going to be in the upper hand because, they, you know, the greatness of them. But I always thought this test is going to be about mentality, character, and then the tactical side comes. Argentina changed their system a little bit. They played, what is it, more like a five at the back and then a couple in the middle and then, you know, Messi and Alvarez up front. And we knew that if we have to play against them, you have to focus. Of course, it's normal. You focus on Messi. How can you stop him? What can you do against him? And then you see how we play against him, and he gets that crucial moment when he gets on the ball, because we focused on when Messi doesn't get the ball. Because a lot of people think about, oh, Messi's only dangerous when he gets the ball. But we all know when he walks around, he's even more dangerous sometimes than when he has the ball. And he gets on the ball, makes that turn, and some kids, I know there are so many people in football that try to do the no-look ball. He plays the ball like a no-look ball. And put Molina right in. And I'm like, oh my God. The moment that ball gets played, it can only be, and I'm going to tell you something. Look, you know when we talk about somebody is great? This ball that he assists, that was the greatness. That was why we talk he's so great. I mean, why I would say he's great. Because the way he slipped him in, it was the weight of the ball, like, you know, the speed of the ball, the way he set him up, and the timing of it, it changed the game. And then we thought it was all over. But then we come back. The way we came back, it was just crazy. And you know what was funny? Because Hernandez, for example, was an Ajax player before. And he knew that how Holland is going to play. They're going to go to the side and bring the balls in. And Weghorst came on and Luke Jong. So as soon as they came on, he knew the long balls are going to come in. It's classical English style. We play like that because that's our plan B. And I know Van Gaal was going to bring that. But what happened now, when the ball was coming in, Weghorst, he scores his first goal, that header, and then that free kick. They have practice it. I didn't expect him to do that because it was like, what is it, 2 minutes or 1 minute before the end? He puts that free kick in, and the guy turns, and he puts it, and I'm like, wow, I couldn't believe it. I'm going to be honest with you. My hope was then going up. Up. I almost wanted to come on my chair, and then I got knocked down. So, yeah, then after that, the penalties, you can prep, but Argentina, it's the second time they did it again.
It's the hope that kills you, Mario. This was such a weird match because not a lot happened, really, until the end.
Well, this turned out to be one of the most exciting games for all different reasons in the World Cup so far. But let's be frank about it. For 70 minutes, whatever it was, before those subs came on, the Dutch were poor.
Yeah.
Dutch, apart from a little bit in the first half, and Mario touched on plan B. It was plan B because plan A was hopeless. And ultimately, it was nothing more than getting two big, gigantic guys up front and hoofing it up from... And you can look at it any way you want. Hoofing it up from every angle on the field out of desperation. And it worked. But I tell you what, the free kick, and I don't want to say the word that I want to use for it.
Oh. Why, are you going to be getting into trouble?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh,
showed right. some
oh, I
incredible...
Steel. Fortitude. Bravery.
Keep going. Well, don't use the word that I was thinking about using. Because to do it with a semi-final place in the offing, to do it with the clock ticking down, and to do it from such a magnificent position to try and get the free kick, which Berghaus had hit earlier, to pull that off in a World Cup at that stage was arguably the best set piece in my lifetime I've ever seen.
The reason it works is because none of us, nobody who's ever played this game at any level would know, would think, would expect that this is going to happen. I'll take it even further. If I were on the field for the Dutch, right, and we decide that this is what we're going to do, and I have the ball in my hand, say, no, we're not doing that.
Right.
We're not doing that. Right? No, let me take
this
the free
kick. It's our last chance.
Yes, we're not wasting it on this. Let me take the responsibility, and whatever happens, happens. But we're not going to try to play this thing in, and what if it doesn't work, right? But that's the thought process of people that have been around the game for years. You're not thinking, it wasn't even in my mind, and I don't think it was in anybody's mind, hey, you know what they're going to do here? They're just going to play it short, and they're going to score over that. It wasn't going to happen. It wasn't in the cards. That's not part of the plan. And yet it was so perfect. That's why it worked.
And he had to score.
Yes, too.
It's one thing getting it.
And yep. I believe when the ball went to Weghorst, he was actually, well, there was a man came to, I don't know if he was marking him at the time, but he got close to him. But Ali's right. I mean, I'm thinking of
it. And he's done it before. Yeah, 2 years ago, there was a video of him doing it at Wolfsburg, which is one thing.
Right.
For him to do it in the quarterfinal of the World
Cup. You're 2 minutes away from the World Cup semi-final or going out, and when somebody comes over and said, this is what we're doing.
No. No, we're not doing it.
Right, get him off. He's injured. He's got a broken nose.
Look, I understand what you both are saying, but when for Gaal, he has said to them before the game so many times, and let me tell you something, guys. You don't change anything. If you would have changed that in the game, oh my God, it would have been crazy things. Because that's why he protects you so well. And he set them up to do that. And we play training games like that already because we have a game called the short game. It's like 3-on-3. It's really intense. And you play similarities like that. You play the striker in and you try to let him drop it off and shoot it in. But so that's why the practice perfectly and the setup. I'm not saying it because, of course, now I saw it. So that's why I'm going to say he did it well. But away from that, you cannot change it, guys. You know yourself when you play. There are some tactical movements that we do. We cannot touch that. When the coach says do this, you're going to do it.
Well, but the interesting thing is, though, Mario, they were in a similar position, I don't know if it was 5 or 10 minutes before, and they didn't do that. Berghaus went for a strike. It wasn't a bad strike, but it hit the wall. But let me... anyway, whatever. It was absolutely brilliant. And it just made... But let me tell you, Argentina had lost the plot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Messi himself had... He was as close as I'd ever seen him. Because... And by the way, and we talked about it, I'm not saying he's a bad ref, I just don't like him.
Yeah, Mateo Lajos.
Lajos, we see it in La Liga most weeks when we cover him.
Yeah.
It's too much about him. He was booking the bench in the first half. Somebody tell me how many bookings. Nobody knows. We ran
63.
Out. Huh?
63 bookings in total.
63 bookings.
No, that's a large number. And very high number.
When Paredes kicked it into the bench, yes, after that free kick, and then Van Dijk came bowling over, yeah, like the bouncer, I thought, this is gone now.
Yes.
And then the Argentina were blaming La Hoz, yeah, at the final whistle.
Yes.
When really, the decisions he gave actually were correct.
But it was 10 minutes of added time because he spent 7 minutes talking to people. Right? And so this game wasn't out of control until Mateo Lajos
let it get that way.
Let it get to the point to where it was now out of control. To the point that Craig is making in terms of Argentina being in trouble. They were wobbly. They were on the ropes. And so there was a thought process for me that I'm thinking, you know what? If I'm the Netherlands, this is the moment in which we keep going forward. Down the same path that we were just at the end of the match. Let's not take a step back. Let's keep going, because Argentina, they don't quite know what has happened. I'm not saying that you keep Van Dijk as a center forward. No, you bring Van Dijk back as a center back. But you keep lumping balls in there because they haven't dealt with it. And instead of doing that, the Netherlands said, no, we're going to take a step back here. We're going to give the ball to Argentina. And Argentina was allowed to regain some sort of momentum, to regain a sense of what was happening, to the point to where Argentina were the more likely to score at the end of extra time. This is on the Netherlands. They had an opportunity to take a step forward, to go and try to win the game. They decided to protect themselves.
Yeah, why didn't they ride that momentum, Mario? Because obviously they get that late goal, goes to extra time, right, really put the pressure on this Argentina side who are falling apart in front of us. But as Ali said, they got a step back.
Yeah, we lost a little bit of balance also. What Ali said was right, because we lost a little bit of balance. If you could see, like, towards the end, you could see that the team started losing shape. There was a lot of gaps in it. But because in the beginning, we became desperate. You know, when you become desperate, you do different things, right? You forget about certain basic things. And when they started lumping the ball in, I totally agree. Argentina had no answer. It wasn't cute. It didn't look good, but it was very effective. But then afterwards, they got back, because now they got the score back and they said, okay, let's ride this out. And they believed in the penalties because they had to do that at the end. And then they get the ball against the post because Argentina hit the post then. And then, look, for me, the thing is, I totally agree with Ali. Just push them all the way. Why are you stopping? You don't have to stop. Why are you stopping? Because there's no reason for it. There is they lost their touch. And you could see the fight and the things that were dragging out and running the clock down. Argentina is very good at that. I think in like the mental game, the mindset game, they won by far. They know how to go down. They know how to get you. When the guy struck the ball against the bench, any bench will kick off. But he did that on purpose because he knew that they were going to jump for it. So that's why I feel like, no, Holland should have gone all the way for it.
Julian Laurent hot-footed from the game to join us alongside Shaq. Jules, the emotion of the Argentinian fans has been so evident, of course, throughout this tournament. One of the most vocal of the supporters group. What was it like to see them go through that roller coaster for 120 minutes and then the penalties? We've lost Jules, I think, for... I think we've just lost contact with Jules there.
Mark calling Austin. Come in, Austin.
You're back.
Oh, he's back.
He's back. It must have been Jules, the Mark calling Austin.
There you are, you see. Jules, the emotion, obviously, you were at the game of the Argentinian fans. It must have been something to see.
It was incredible, really, because as the boys were saying after that second goal, They dropped so completely, they were so shocked and so like if they'd been knocked out in a boxing match, they were on the ropes. And I think the fact that the Netherlands just stopped playing at the start of extra time, and then the Argentine fans saw that their teams was getting confidence back and getting a lot of the ball, they started believing again. But for a few minutes, it was like, what's happened here? Really, they didn't know where they were and what just happened to them. And I think, like the boy said, it was a big chance missed, because after that, once they got back into the groove, those fans, then it was like we were in Buenos Aires again, and it was crazy. And then they pushed them so much. I've never heard a penalty shootout where the whistling and the booing is that loud, really. And those players are used to big pressure games and big crowd and stuff like that. So I don't know if he played a role or not in in Van Dijk missing, in De Gea missing, for example. But certainly, he was so noisy that it can't have been nice if you were a Dutch player taking your penalty.
Shaka, should we give a goalkeeper some love?
Hey!
Absolutely. I thought Emilio Martinez again was outstanding in the penalty shootout. He was called into action right at the end of the Australia game again, just to maintain that 2-1 lead for Argentina later in that their first knockout stage game. And I thought he was simply outstanding. He looked big. And made these saves when called on. Got his timings, and I'm always talking about this with priority shootouts, how important it is for keepers to get those timings just right. And he did that. And truth be told, I thought, just kind of given how the game swung, coming from two goals down, that the momentum was with the Dutch. But Martinez apparently didn't read that script.
The most important moment for Argentina, beyond scoring the goals in the manner in which they did, is Emiliano Martinez making that first penalty kick.
Sir Van Dijk, yeah.
Absolutely. Because going into the penalties, it's almost as if, well, there he goes. That's it. We had our chance. We blew it.
Yeah.
Netherlands, they play for penalties. Here we go. We're going to penalties. Momentum is with them. And that stadium exploded when Dibu Martinez made that initial save. And he changed, obviously, the momentum and how the penalties were going to be taken to the point of the penalties. We sat here in this studio and asked a question. It was actually put forth as, should Lionel Messi be taking the penalties for Argentina?
Right.
Following his miss.
Actually save against
Spain. Yes. And we said then, well, nobody else is going to take the penalty. It has to be Lionel Messi. And the moments of pressure, Lionel Messi puts the ball down. And I've said all along, these slow run-ups are only for the very elite.
Yeah.
And this guy... not only in the game, but then in the shootout, stares the big boy, Nopper, stares at his eyes, and he says, you're going to go, and I'm going to put it the other way. That takes some nerves. Yeah. He's got him. Goalkeeper doesn't. Argentina win.
He stood up, didn't he? And Neymar didn't.
Yes.
Ultimately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people say he shouldn't take a couple of penalties in a game, never mind a World Cup quarterfinal when he's got the whole of Argentina resting on his shoulders, looking for somebody to blame. But look, the Dutch have been criticised, or sorry, Van Gaal has been criticised to an extent, and Mario knows this more than me, for the style. And he talked about winning. Prefer style or you prefer winning? Well, ultimately, maybe a little part of the US game, apart from that, they haven't played well at all. And for all these great Dutch players over the years, and there's been many, they've never looked more dangerous in this tournament when they had two big, you know, yep, hod carriers up, yep, front. Let's be honest, and Weghorst was at Burnley, and couldn't really cut the mustard there, and De Jong's been around the block. And that's when they looked the most dangerous. Not the silky football, not Gakpo and Depay. When they were lumping in the box, and maybe to give them a small excuse, was they put so much effort into that final 10 minutes or whatever it was, plus the injury time, and that they did change shape, and Aki went to left back, and it just felt that once they went to extra time, that whistle had gone, and they couldn't quite get that momentum going again. And Argentina, as Ali said, got a foothold in the game and started peppering that goal. But let's be honest, the Dutch have just not done enough in this competition, apart from launching it into the box at the end. Bit of desperation, a great free kick, of course, but just not enough quality for them, I'm afraid.
A word on Lionel Messi. While he's not the player that he once was, we recognize that, and it's really interesting to see how a player changes right in front of our eyes, how he has managed to change his game. He's not running away from people the way in which he once did. People are catching up to, mm-hmm, him, and they're able to close spaces down that they weren't before. Regardless, whenever he gets involved in the game, he gives Argentina clarity. He attracts all the attention, and then he finds the pass that releases everything else. So he is indeed the definition of an outlet. You find him, he resolves the issue, and now you move forward. And it happens time and time again. In the assist to Nahuel Molina, he's already seen Nahuel Molina, and there is a beautiful look in one of the replays in which he sees Molina and continues to dribble inside, and all he's looking for is an angle, knowing full well that he's going to go find Molina. All he needs is an angle. All I need to do is just get around this defender to find this no-look pass this way. It's a level of greatness, an elite talent that we saw, that we see from the special ones. He's a special one.
We also learned today that that nobody else apart from Lionel Messi is allowed to intentionally handball.
Yes.
Well, yes. And then, Lahoz, nothing to see here.
What?
Sorry, Lionel. I'll be running for dinner next weekend again.
Go on, Mario.
But the ref, I exactly what he says, what Greg says. How could he not give him a yellow card? You know, like it's like look, guys. I tell you honestly, yes, I love Messi. I think great footballer, but away from that, come on, give the guy the yellow card just like everybody else. And even I know that some of the Dutch guys were saying that. You know, they were saying like, hey, ref, you got to book him just like the other. And Van Dijk said it, and the ref says no. And Van Dijk looked at the ref, saying like, almost like, you know, because I have a feeling with the ref that you guys talked about. This is the guy. I am the first one to say, I never like referees which you cannot talk to. I had a couple of times, you know, and you want to say something to them, they go, no, no, no. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, yeah. And he is identical to that because you can see how he reacts. But away from that, I felt Argentina, when we talk about them, when they how they played and how they performed, it was for me just to see how a team knows they have a star man, but everybody is getting confidence. Look at who goes forward and gets the penalty, but just he knew that the things that he brings is this eagerness. And that is what I felt like at the moment when he got that penalty. It was just down to playing with Messi gives you, makes you feel like you can do anything because you're so confident. I think that was the thing. And then when they lost that, we should have killed them.
I think when Scaloni looks at his subs...
Can I just add on?
Go on, Shaq.
Sorry, if I can just add something on the back of what Ali said. And listen, we'll wax lyrical about Lionel Messi's performance as a player, and rightly so. I am with everybody in world football. That assist for the opening goal is one of the best passes I've ever seen. But in contrast to the discussion we were having around Neymar, I thought Lionel Messi was everything Argentina needed him to be from a leadership perspective. I'm in agreement with the boys in that I thought Lahoz was awful on the day. Yet I thought he was very pro-Argentine. I thought he allowed Argentina to get away with things. They laid on Messi handball. Paredes could have been sent off for the challenge and then kicking the ball in. I thought both of those were yellow cards. He then goes to the back of Frankie de Jong, which again could have been another a yellow card. How Paredes stayed on the pitches is simply beyond me. That being said, at halftime, as the teams are going into the tunnel, Lionel Messi stays out and confronts Lahoz for a good couple of minutes. Now, the analysts and me are saying this is not a good look. A Spanish referee, Lionel Messi, standing up to him in the middle of the park for as long as he was. The football player in me is saying that is exactly what I want from my leader. That is exactly what I want from somebody that carries the gravitas in the game that Lionel Messi does. And I feel that had an impact on how the game went, how the game was officiated from there on in. So from every single aspect of this game, Lionel Messi gave to Argentina every single thing that they needed to get through this tie.
Mm-hmm. Messi actually said that he didn't want to talk about the referee, but Mateo Lahoz shouldn't be refereeing these sort of big matches.
Oh,
so there you go.
Well, he didn't let him off.
There's a kick for you. Right, let's get more reaction now. I know Alexis is waiting patiently by as well. She's been mingling with both sets of fans. Should we start with the Argentinian fans? I imagine they're rather happy, Alexis.
Yeah, Dan, they're absolutely happy and mingling with both sets of fans. Not so much the Dutch. Unfortunately, it was very hard to find them. As you can imagine, that stadium was again like part 2.0 of being La Bombonera. I think there was about 1,500 Dutch fans that were expected. Pascal Kamperman, who told us from ESPN Netherlands, they were expecting maybe 400 more. They sold 400 more tickets, but they were just a drop in a big bucket of Argentina fans. And before the game, you know, we got to speak to some of them, or I was just trying to pick their brains to see if they were going to be happy with the fact that Brazil were out, and they were absolutely thrilled. I had to remind them, hey, don't you want that semi-final against Brazil, you know? And it would be so good for CONMEBOL as well, but they said no, because with Brazil out, that means our path to the final is a lot easier, because you never know what you're going to get from Brazil. But then I think when they went inside, they said they wanted an easier match. They feel like they haven't really seen an Argentina as dominant as they'd want them to be. At the end of each match, we just keep talking about the brilliance of Leo Messi and how much they are so lucky to continuously have him. And as you can see, everyone's still chanting Messi, Messi, Messi behind us. And that's what they wanted to see today, but that is not what they got. It was still another painstakingly tense match as well. You know, the Netherlands, I thought, did well in the first 30 minutes to kind of stop Argentina's rhythm. A couple of the Argentine players looked a bit frustrated, and then once again this match was just screaming for something from Leo Messi. And once he made that pass, and of course Molina scored, everyone celebrated. It was absolute limbs. But immediately after the celebrations, everyone just started saying one name: Messi, Messi, and bowing down, because they knew once again that he had come to their rescue. And I mean, the only time that the Argentina fans went quiet, of course, was that Dutch equalizer at the death, and you could have heard a pin drop after that. It kind of took the wind out of their sails. The massive band of Argentine fans behind me started to get angry at their own people. They said, what are we here for if we're just going to go quiet when they've equalized? And, you know, Messi came around as well to our end, and he was doing this. Emiliano Martinez as well in the penalties. He, when he saved them, he was going around to the fans and getting them up. But that 12th man has been so special for Argentina. Once again, they feel like they've not dominated as much as they need to. They're still relying heavily on Messi, kind of as Jules said, France rely on Kylian Mbappe. But at the end of the day, if this is what he's going to do, and so far they've managed to survive, then it truly is a special thing to see this magician at work. And now up against Croatia, a couple of them said they are nervous after what they saw Croatia do to Brazil, but they have all the confidence now that they've surpassed such a massive test and probably already see themselves in that final.
Alexis, as always, thank you very much.
Yeah, I would make a very good detective.
Why not?
There's 1,400 people wearing orange supporting the Dutch, and she couldn't find one.
Argentina then will face Croatia. Many thought it was going to be an Argentina-Brazil final, but Croatia pulling off that shot, then going through to meet Lionel Messi's side. Argentina, big favourites, look 11-4 on compared to Croatia 11-5. Let's do a quick whip around, shall we? Jules, who's going through?
I think you can't stop Argentina now. Everything is going their way. I think Croatia will frustrate them, and they will control the ball, and they will have to run after the ball. We saw Brazil doing it, and they won't like doing that. But I think they will have too much for Croatia.
We're hearing Shaka Mateo Lajos will be in charge of this game.
Listen, Dan, I told you all at the start of this tournament that Argentina were going to win it. I never changed my mind once. I'm sticking with Argentina.
There's a man that's gutted after match day one.
Yes.
He jumped ship.
Yeah, jumped ship.
Jumped straight out. He just left the ship.
To the Brazil.
He left the ship burning. He took the one life vest that was on the boat, and he's gone. Gone. He left the whole thing in flames
just
behind.
Just start to whip around. Ask everybody else. Never mind.
Jill said, I can't see anybody stopping Argentina. They were not. Who stopped Brazil?
There you go. Yeah. So you're going Croatia?
I honestly think I don't agree with those odds.
No.
I do think Brazil have got more. Had more in their armoury than Argentina, all round the pitch. Just did not get it done. A big part of that is Croatia. So I'm going to. I mean, the sort of fairy tale story is Messi and Argentina, but this Croatia side, for me, I've got a lot more guts than that. I'm going to go Croatia.
Wow.
Second World Cup final in 4 years.
I am shocked that you don't believe in the fairy tale. CONMEBOL special, baby.
Oh, CONMEBOL.
Yeah. Argentina. Well, we're riding Argentina. It's the only one we got.
That's it. Shaka will be back with us for extra time. Just say,
is he or is he jump channel somewhere
else? Plenty of content over our YouTube channel, including extra time. Be sure to check that out.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. The final quarterfinal on Saturday is, of course, England against France. France, the favourites going into this tie.
You're not even going to watch the Morocco-Portugal game.
Of course I
will. You're going to be prancing around in your lounge, just like muttering to yourself, awaiting some white...
I'll be muttering a lot.
There'll be people in a white van outside your house to take you into an institution. That's how bad you're going.
Welcome in, Mark Ogden joins us. Mark, obviously you're rooming with Jules. This is quite the battle of the roommates.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I think he's tied up my cable as well. I think he's trying to stitch me up here.
But you don't know how to...
How do you see this, Mark?
I think that... I've been watching France last week. I think England are slight favourites, actually. I think that France, for me, haven't got the midfield to compete with England. I think that Mbappe's the X-factor, isn't it? Mbappe's the guy that, you know, nobody can cope with, but I think England have got a really good chance.
No surprises, then? We've just put the team up here, but similar team to the last game, or any changes?
No, I don't see any changes, I really don't. I think that... You know, you could argue that maybe at right back you could maybe bring in Trippier instead of Walker, because I know Walker's at the pace, but Walker for me was caught out a couple of times against Senegal last week. But I think they are banking on his pace. I think they are banking on the fact that Walker's played against him before. He has got that pace. And Mbappe's name checking this week has been one of the fastest players he's played against. But beyond that, I just don't see how you change it. I don't see. I wouldn't argue for Rashford to start. I don't know. I think the team he's got to start with is as good as he's going to get. But you know, France are France. I think, like I say, you take out Mbappe, I think France, with all the injuries, you know, with no Pogba, with no Kante, with no Nkunku, with no Hernandez, I think France, no Benzema, obviously, I think France are a much weaker prospect. So I think, and you know me, I'm not the most optimistic Englishman ever, but I think England have got a chance.
No. Jules, what's the big talking point from a French perspective going into this tie?
Well, I think we're hoping that England put quite a lot of focus and energy at trying to stop Kylian Mbappe, of course, and that we can benefit from that with having more freedom to Griezmann, more freedom to Dembele. I think people overlook the Dembele-Vichot matchup, I think, and everybody focuses on Kylian, of course, and rightly so, I think, because he will have a big part to play in this game, and if England can't stop him, then I think we're going through. But the Dembele-Vichot is quite a fascinating one as well, and I think... Let's not forget how good Dembele has been at times. Not always, but at times there's still issues with his decision-making. But at times he's been really good in this tournament. And I think Schalke and Maguire can struggle against him. There's the Griezmann new role and that new position as well that I think can hurt England. So I really think it's a 50-50. Maybe you can give 55-45 to France because of Kylian. But I think this one is a very tight one and it's hard to call, even if I kind of have to agree with Mark. I've got a bad feeling about this one. And I think... tomorrow can be England's day, really. But I think the French have a lot of arguments and you can make a case for them winning as well.
You can see the mental struggle that Jules is already having. Let's take a look, shall we, at the predictions. Only Jules and Craig Two people going for an England victory. Elsewhere, everybody else.
Hold on. Did Augie just not say France is England?
Well, he's gone 3-1 here.
I changed your mind.
Yeah, he just said that. Yeah, 3-1. Exactly.
Exactly.
His predictions are a mess. Why, Craig?
Look, I think the French are really good. Obviously, I mean, hopefully this is not going to be the most boring game, you know, because it's on paper, it looks like an amazing match. Why? I think if the two English fullbacks get exposed to Dembele or Mbappe cheating, and I think that's a big worry for Shaw going forward. I think if they get exposed, the French will get at Maguire. If Dembele gets at Maguire, it's history, right, or Mbappe. But I just... If England can do the basics, it's in a big if defensively. I just like the rotation they've got up front and in midfield. I just feel they're performing well in there. I think Henderson in there along with Rice gives Bellingham that, who's obviously was brilliant last time out, gives him that extra edge and confidence to step forward and run with the ball and make those late runs. And if Foden and Saka's not happening, he's got three or four players he can make changes to. And for me, that's why I think it's going to be a high-scoring, potentially English victory. Mm. And that's Scott. I mean, as a Scotsman, it's not easy to say that. Right.
Mario, what are you going for? How do you see this game going?
I think that France is going to do the surprise package to England, because I know that the English are talking about, okay, this is their opportunity. But just what Greg said, I feel Dembele could be even, you know, like, the focus is on Mbappe. Everybody focuses on it. I've heard Walker says that too. What he says is the answer to it. I love it, what he said. Like, look, we all talk about Mbappe, but it's also about me and about my country. Okay, but Dembele, that's another one for me. Like, when he gets on the ball, it's not easy, one against one, with a guy that dribbles left foot can cross right foot. That's very difficult. Like, sometimes people don't talk about it, but the system that he has, Dembele, I tell you straight up, okay, Mbappe, I'm not going to say like it's easier to play against, but at least you know what he's going to do. If the pace is behind you, he's going to go for it. But Dembele is unpredictable. So that's why, that's one. And then, of course, we got, you know, Giroud. Giroud is not the guy that we look at and thinking like, oh, he's going to do some crazy stuff. But he scores goals and you go like, wow. So that's why I go for France. I feel, you know, Tchouaméni in the middle of the park, he will put the balance in. Yes, France is going to maybe come up with a surprise, regardless if I like what England is doing.
All right, you'd have to smile when you say it. Thank you very much. Mario will be back for extra time. We'll say thank you as well to Mark and Jules. Oh, what fun it's going to be in your flat tomorrow. Meanwhile, of course, the opening quarterfinal Saturday is Morocco against Portugal. Portugal 3-1 on to advance to the semi-final. Morocco looking, of course, to defy the odds and defy everybody, actually. Nobody has given Morocco any love whatsoever. In fact, it's going to be a two-goal deficit, with the exception of Craig and Frank, who thinks it's going to be tighter than that. Of course, we'll be looking back at England against France, Morocco against Portugal, and looking ahead to the semi-finals, which are on Tuesday and Wednesday on the next edition of the show, so be sure to join us. For more reaction from what we've seen in these extraordinary quarterfinals, be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available to listen to now.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
That must be the big chair on the left side.
Yeah, always the big chair.
Joel's there, yes. And then he sits there when Gab's not there.
Yeah, that is it.
Standard.
That brings us to the end of today's show. Be sure to stay tuned, though, as Extra Time is next. This is FC Extra Time, brought to you by Globen. Hello and welcome into the FC studio. Craig's with us, as is Ali. Shaka as well. Shaka looking quite stern. Mario smiling, despite the fact, of course, the Dutch out.
But he knew they were going out anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, man, I didn't know that, Greg. Come on, I didn't know that. I was hoping for the miracle, Greg.
Oh, man.
Shaq's looking a bit stern because he was made to go to a game.
Shaq looks like he lost his luggage and had to borrow a jumper from somewhere. I don't know where that's come from.
That's a nice jumper. We're on a boat.
I have my dad.
Jules took his polo.
Are you in the middle of the desert, Jack?
Long sleeves. I was always for the Middle East. Long sleeves. You know.
It's cold. It's winter. It's winter. It's cold.
Winter. Oh, you're saying. Okay. What's the most interesting free kick routine that has worked for you in your playing days? Was the Dutch routine one of the best you have seen? You said it was one of the best.
I said what?
Best set pieces.
By the way, we had these set pieces with Scotland for years.
Right.
Not that fancy. Right.
Well, it's not that fancy, was it?
Well, fancy enough, wasn't it? Yeah. And honestly, we used to do these set pieces, different ones, and over a 10-year period, you know how many worked? Zero.
Why don't they work?
Because you're when you train those things, you do it against cones.
Right.
When you play against live people that actually move.
How dare they? How dare they?
They get in the way.
People get in the way and stuff these things up.
Mario, did you ever work on set pieces like that?
No, I know. We never had like moments like that. We just like the guys who just kick it, and I wasn't part of it because my kick wasn't good enough.
I think in the 98 World Cup, maybe Argentina against England, they did a little.
Yes, yes, they did.
A little something, a little triangulation around the wall.
That was the Beckham game, the Mike Lowen goal. Yes.
Yeah, it might have been Zanetti that scored in that set piece.
I don't remember.
Oh, you forgot that one, huh? Oh, yes. How convenient.
Yeah. Hmm. Shaka, what do you think is the reason for so many penalties being saved at this year's World Cup? The odds are so against the goalie, it's insane.
I think the keepers have just got it right. I keep seeing every time I see goalkeepers shooting in this tournament, they get the timing right. If you can get that first movement just right, I think it takes away the kicker going to the other side and switching things up. And I just think that those keepers have done incredibly well. And then you've got the likes of Szczęsny, who just produced the incredible. But that is separate.
Keepers are getting bigger. It's the global warming of goalkeepers.
Really? This is a result of global warming?
Well, it's a result of global something, but they're getting...
Because you think the fact that... God, I was watching the AC Milan-Liverpool penalty shootout from 2005 in the Champions League final.
Hold on. You were watching that?
Somebody sent it to me, and it's only interesting... Well, it's interesting because Dudek is like almost at the six-yard line when the penalty is taken, and no one batters an eyelid. And now people are more stringent about the goalkeeper having a foot on the line, so you imagine it was more in favour of the player.
It was, and they would eke it out. But it's amazing that actually the goalkeepers in some sense have figured out how to deal with that with the back foot.
Right.
And it's not affected them too much. But I do think size... I'm not going to say this.
What size, Craig?
I do think the size...
size of goalkeeper. It's not, Craig.
It's important.
not allowed to. I do think this. Okay.
Good job.
I have no other words to describe it.
No. I have to apologize to Shaka.
Oh, why?
I have to apologize to Shaka because when Craig was saying that goalkeepers are getting bigger.
Yes.
Yep. I thought Shaka.
Oh, I see. But Shaka's getting wider. Not.
Yeah, yeah. My apologies, Shaq. My bad.
Well, it is off-putting for a player when you see...
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is. And you look at the keepers, Alisson, Emi Martinez, and good grief, although I don't think he saved one. Noppert?
Mm-hmm. No.
Noppert, no.
He's gigantic, by the way. No.
His head's almost touching the crossbar. Huge.
For Mario, was this a successful World Cup for your team? Losing in the quarterfinals against Argentina on penalties isn't something to be upset with. I think that's fair.
No, of course you have to be upset. Because, look, you wanted to win. I know it goes to penalties. Penalties is difficult because then it's just on both hands, right? It's always been like football. I hated it, and I know why I hate it, because you can't control the outcome anymore. But we could do a little bit better, because we have so many times we've been knocked down by this situation, and definitely by Argentina. So yeah, I would say we could have done better, but is it fair? It's never fair. Losing is never fair. It doesn't matter when you lose. Never fair.
How excited were you in that second goal when the equalizer went in, Mario?
Oh my God. I'm not going to say, but I was I was doing the live game and I was going crazy. I was like, oh my God, that's screaming. You know, we don't have a shot on goal the first half. Come on, guys. Allow me to scream at least the second half. Because the first half, there was nothing to scream for me before. So the second half, I was screaming like crazy.
Steve Nicol, I spoke to you on the drive-in, took the dog for a walk at 2-0 because he thought it was over.
Oh. Does he know what happened?
I don't know.
No surprise.
Craig, what liabilities do Argentina have that you think Croatia can take advantage of?
Discipline.
Yeah.
Was one in the end. Scaloni made substitutions to calm the game down and it had the opposite effect.
Yeah.
You know, bookings for substitutes, Paredes could have been sent off. I'm not going to say this because Stevie will love it, but yeah. Launching the ball in the box at the end.
Yes.
But, you know, not many teams have two guys at almost what height? Veghorst is 6'6 or whatever he was.
Yep.
And
De Jong's not far off.
Not far off. So not many teams have that. Otamendi and Martinez struggle. I don't know what's Ali. You know.
Well, I just think Argentina have figured out who's going to play in the middle for them, and that's Enzo Fernandez. And that's something that they had to figure out by trial and error in the first couple of games. McAllister has been important to them.
Yeah.
But when you think about one of the most important players for Argentina that is not named Lionel Messi, Rodrigo De Paul is one of the names that comes up. And he comes off the field today. There were questions as to what his fitness was going to be. Comes off injured today. Di Maria only came in the second half of extra time. So the level of fitness for Argentina as a whole doesn't seem to be all that strong. Maybe that's something that Croatia can take advantage of through possession and controlling the game and the pace of the game.
Is that your Burner account, by the way?
What's that? Oh.
I love Dan. Dan's biggest fan.
It's
definitely you.
No.
One of your kids.
Yeah. If it was one of my kids, it definitely not say I love Dan. And Denise would certainly not have that either.
So who loves you, Dan?
Hey.
I don't know.
Oh. Shaka, how's
you okay?
I'm flustered.
Whoa.
Shaka, how surprised are you that no one got a red card in the Netherlands Argentina game?
Desperately, as I said during the show, Berghaus got booked I didn't even think it was a foul, I'll be honest, on Lionel Messi in the 80th minute. Like I say, I didn't even think it was a foul. Somehow he picks up a booking. Less than 60 seconds later, Paredes goes flying into a challenge and then boots the ball straight into the Netherlands dugout. Both of those, in my mind, were yellow worthy. And then in extra time, he goes to the back of Frenkie de Jong. That was without question, again, yellow worthy. So how Lahoz decided not to send anybody off, Paredes top of that list, is beyond me.
Yeah, Mario, kind of leads into the next question.
Never mind that. How many pies did you have during the game? How many pies did you have during the game? Come on. Steak and kidney? Okay. Shaq, what were you having?
None. What? I was home. I went to the Brazil game. There were no pies at the Brazil game. There were no pies at Brazil.
Why? So what are they selling for eating?
Yeah, it's home for. I don't know.
Hey, guys,
I'm
I have a question.
Very strict diet. My body's a
what,
temple.
Pies?
Right?
Is it a pie question? If it's not a pie question, I don't want to know.
What do you want, Mario?
No. You remember one time we saw somebody striking the ball in the crowd, and he came back and he got a red card for that. There was something happened. I was on the show,
on
and
pies,
someone
yes.
struck the ball, and then
MLS.
He went upstairs to
MLS.
Apologize. Yes, he went to apologize, and eventually, I think he got a red card for doing that. So that's why I was like also surprised when, you know, the player did it from Argentina, and nothing happened. Just the rock kicked off. I was surprised in that moment too. Yeah, so I was like, same thing.
I'm really just intrigued because you can't get a beer. So what's the culinary? You know, it's
you
not.
Can tell Craig's on a diet. He's got food on the brain.
It's not a game of football if you can't go and stuff your face at halftime or send somebody, family member or friend, to come back.
Family member or friend?
Well, somebody to game with you. Oh, a stranger. All right, send a stranger.
Excuse me, would you mind guarding me a pie, please?
So I'm just intrigued. It's worrying me. It's worrying me what you're going to get to eat during the game in the Middle East.
Has Lahoz given us the worst performance ever by a ref? Messi handled the ball, no yellow. Paredes should have been sent off a few times and always blew his whistle.
All of those things were frustrating, but the fact that he made it about himself.
Yeah.
From the very
like
early Craig's, part of the
Craig's
game.
Craig's obsession with pies?
Is yes.
Like Lahoz's obsession with it.
Yeah. And it's having a conversation with this coach and having a conversation with that manager and then yellow card to the guy sitting on the bench. It's almost as if he's paying more attention to the guys off the field than the guys on the field who are the ones that you ought to pay attention to. And it reminds me of referees that just want to take over, right? They want to be the protagonist, if you will. And you just want to go up to them and say, you know, Mateo, Señor Lateo Lajos, they're not here to see you. Mm. All these people here in the stadium, all the people watching in TV, they're here to see us. Not you.
You get booked for that. You get booked for that, Ali. If you say that to him, he will book you.
Nor Mateo Lajos, he would not book me.
Hey, I'm just into it's Messi or not.
See, that's me just morphing into Columbo.
Right,
remember
okay.
Columbo?
Yes, yeah.
Just one more thing.
The detective, yeah.
I'm trying to find out if Shaq was actually at the game.
Oh, okay.
That's my way around about it. Instead of just saying, Shaq, you didn't go to the game, is that what pies do they have?
Right. What food was at the game? Shut him up, Shaka.
What food was at the game? I'm not taking off for an answer.
I don't know. I
you weren't at the game. You didn't go.
I didn't go for any food.
Okay.
You didn't go for any food. I've never seen you at your desk.
I was at the Brazil game.
At your desk in this building without munching food from the calf.
This is from Stevie's ex-barber, 035. Not a question, but just let me officially thank Dr. Shaka for lifting his curse off Argentina when he supported them and placed it on Brazil. He gets a free haircut from me for that.
Hey.
Yeah.
I want like the number two. The number two that Stevie had, that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want
yeah,
to
exactly.
Like Stevie.
Three on the top, two on the sides, I think it was. Final question, Dan, were you able to get a refund on that flight to Brazil? I thought it'd be a nice gift, early Christmas present for my wife to send her to Brazil on Sunday to watch the semi-finals and the final, with her Brazilian family.
Oh.
Instead, they now get to watch Croatia-Argentina together.
Oh my God.
That's the oldest trick in the book, isn't it?
What's that?
That's the oldest trick. That's the oldest trick in
yes
the book.
Yes, it is.
Wait, don't you start, Shaq.
It's the oldest trick in the book. It's been played 1,000 times. I think it'd be really good. You go to Brazil. It would be an amazing atmosphere and watch.
That's nice.
The
what a nice gesture. Beautiful. I don't know. There was no.
It's a Christmas gift.
Yep. Hello. Yep. Is that the babysitter? Yes, you're needed round the house. I'm going out.
Wow.
That's a nice gesture.
Colombo.
Just a good loving heart.
On that very inaccurate point, we will end today's show. Thank you very much to Mario and to Shaka and to Columbo.
Love shall overcome. Love shall overcome.
ESPN FC then back on your screens tomorrow. Oh, it's England. Are you here tomorrow?
Do you want me to be?
No. I really don't. Oh, Ali and Craig back tomorrow.
You might not be if she's watching. Oh.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.